Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It's been positively too long since I've been over in the Ville, hanging out at State Fair and eating the chicken and waffles, and at some point we're going to get back to some normalcy, but they are doing curbside there, and of course, our friends at Fadley's, where our guest in this segment's name has come up more than on one occasion with Don Moeller. Don, we got a Baltimore Positive segment here, and I want to give some love to your boy Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realty, because I know he's closing deals in the middle of the pandemic as well. But we talk so much about where this election's going and the feel and the vibe, and I know you love polls more than I do, but this is something that you pay particular attention, having been in the political space, that these polls matter and where they go matter, and we have an expert today, don't we?
We do have an expert in the president of Gonzales Research, Patrick Gonzales. Been following Patrick's work for many, many years, been looking at his polls, commissioning his polls, you name it. And you're right, Nestor, I do believe in polls. We'll have Patrick talk a little bit about it. I think, he's called some recent races somewhat differently than some other pollsters. We'll talk about that. So, Patrick, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Well, welcome, Don, and welcome, Nestor. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I always begin this, as I did with Malia Cromer or any pollster, that I was an Arbitron guy for 30 years, where they would send out an envelope with a dollar bill and a stamp, and that literally would dictate whether Baltimore Area Ford would buy me or not, right? Mm-hmm. And I lived in 30 years of ratings and books and numbers, and I never really lived in that because I was a 0.0. Arbitron would tell you for 30 years no one's ever listened to me or my radio station. It's astonishing. But so I come from that background that I'm always a little skeptical. So first things first, for our audience, if you don't know how polls work, I just gave sort of a synopsis of the way Arbitron worked in 1992. I would think in the digital era, we have a whole bunch of different ways this happens. I catch my wife in the other room on the phone with various candidates because we live in Baltimore City, calling and talking her ear off about one candidate or another. I get text all day. But a poll, what do you do that allows us to then say you called a race one way or another based on the science, as I've been taught, of what you do?
Well, Nestor, first of all, skepticism is good.
So that makes me a journalist.
Don't you ever change? Well, I'm not sure these days that makes you a journalist, but don't ever change. Essentially, what we're trying to do is, I suppose, what Arbitron was trying to do 25 years ago when they sent you a buck. You take a universe, you design a sample that reflects that universe, you talk to that sample, and hopefully at the end of the day you have information that generally reflects the universe as a whole. That's it in a nutshell.
So Patrick, talk about that piece, and we'll get in specifically to this mayoral race, which just day by day looks fascinating, and Nestor and I are going to spend the entire week talking with mayoral candidates, trying to give people information to make a decision. But talk to our listeners who might not be as familiar with polls as some in terms of how you go about putting together. Let's take Baltimore City. Let's use it as a real-life laboratory example. You were polling that race. You were polling it a lot before the pandemic. We'll talk about why you're not polling now post-pandemic. But talk about, take us behind the curtain of putting together the sample if you want to come up with a credible poll in Baltimore City.
Okay, and I will. But real quick, Don, I'm going to give you and Nestor a little background on something that I think more people are familiar with and give you a sense of how polls can be kind of used or misused. 2016, fundamentally, no one thought Donald Trump was going to win. All the polls said Hillary Clinton was going to win. Now, in 2000, but most of that polling was based on a national poll. The first problem with that was we don't have a national election, but let's just for a second assume the national polling in 2016, why was it a little askew? Fundamentally, what you had to have and what you have to have in any poll, and I'll get to Baltimore City real quick as an example, you have to have an accurate representation of what is kind of going on. And in the United States, in 2016, you needed to have a sample that was about 35 to 37% Democrat, about 33 to 35% Republican, and about 30% Independent. Consistently, what you were getting were polls that were, the sample was at or over 40% Democrat. And that just skewed the poll.
Now, why was that, Patrick?
Why was that?
Yes.
In some cases, it was incompetence. And in some cases, I suspect it was a deliberate attempt to kind of manipulate the numbers in a way to show a more favorable response for a point of view.
Because that's one of the things that Nestor and I have talked about a lot. We did talk about it with Malia, and we've talked about it with others, is that the poll is, and you just nailed it. I mean, you came right out of the box with it. The poll is only as good as its representative sample.
Yeah, and now, particularly, Don, when you have a country that's going 90-10 one way as a Democrat and 90-10 another way as a Republican, if you've got a sample that's 4, 5, 6 points high, one way or the other, you got problems. You got, you know, and if it's 10 points high, you got humongous problems. So anyway,
well, I mean,
so Patrick,
go ahead, Don.
Quick question,
keep going.
Nestor, before you jump in. So, Patrick, back in 2016, you rather famously predicted a few days before the election that Donald Trump was going to win. Not many pollsters were doing that. Is that because your sample was different at the time, or was that just the Gonzales gut?
It was mostly the Gonzales gut. I was on air, and I honestly did not think the black vote was going to come out for Clinton in the way it had for Obama. I honestly thought Trump was going to win Pennsylvania because of that. And at the point I talked about that, which is about 10 days before the election, in my mind, Ohio was already gone for Trump. I saw Florida at the time kind of shifting toward Trump. So it was a bottom line. And the one polling number that got very scant mention during that election was that the election was going to be decided by those that hated both of them. In other words, which is about 20% of the electorate. I do not like Donald Trump, and I do not like Hillary Clinton. And in those within that group, consistently, when pushed, Trump was winning that group by a decent margin. So it was kind of all those things. But basically, it was instinct less than polling.
Patrick Gonzalez is here. He does polls, and you can find him and his research out at GonzalezResearch.com, public opinion surveys, data analysis, issue advocacy, and then there's the mayor's situation here. And it's a fascinating case study all the way around for where we were 4 years ago. And I literally did a little Google search 10 minutes before he came on just to look around, and I saw stuff sort of lingering from 16 about what the issues were, and you were quoted, and you know, all the typical Baltimore resources, the Baltimore Sun, all those places talking about the 16 race in Pew. It's amazing 4 years later where we are as a city now, 5 years out on Freddie Gray, in the middle of a pandemic, moving an election, voting. I just did a mail-in vote on the Quaisium Fumé. I live in the 7th down at the harbor, and we're in a different world here, right? And I think all bets are sort of off in any way for any of these candidates that we're having on this week. I don't think anybody really knows who's going to win this thing on June 2nd, right?
Anybody who says with certainty that they know what's going to happen is kidding themselves. So, no.
Why is that? Why has this become... I mean, maybe the coronavirus has changed or altered what might have, could have, would have happened in the 6 weeks leading up to it?
I think probably, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, the last time I took a peek at the city race was 2 months ago, pre-coronavirus. And as I sit here today, I have a sense of what I think is likely to happen, but I have not a clue how the coronavirus and the subsequent shelter-in, mail-in ballot is going to ultimately impact the election.
Well, let's talk about it then. Let's go through the candidates. I mean, we have an incumbent mayor who has been elected many times, but never as a mayor, who has, quite frankly, just literally disappeared, man. I mean, I live in the middle of the city. I don't see, I don't hear, I don't, you know, I see and hear and feel watching just local news, and my wife is a channel surfer. I see Mary spending money. I've seen Thoreau's out. I saw TJ fly his a drone over the city and have a picture of the place I live in some way in the beginning. And we're going to talk to all these people, and we've seen TJ out. We've talked to all of these people at length several times. I think the interesting part here is where the actual mayor is and how many people are going to come out and vote for him, because it has felt very invisible to me.
Well, we know at the beginning of the year when I did my first poll in Baltimore City that a mere 29% of Democratic primary voters at that point said they trust Jack Young to run Baltimore. That in and of itself was a horribly ominous sign for his prospects election day. Now, has that number risen, dropped, or stayed the same since then? My suspicion is it's about the same. So in other words, what I infer from that is there are about 1 in 4 voters in Baltimore, when all is said and done and it's time to fill out their ballot, mail it in, that have enough trust in Jack Young to vote for him. Will 1 in 4 vote for him? I don't think so. I have seen nothing up to this point to suggest to my, you know, political eye that he is going to get much more. I'm still convinced he's probably going to end up in single digits when all is said and done.
Well, that's a sort of a glaring indictment on all of it, that we had Rethrenau Hathaway on last month. He said 70% of the people that have involved themselves enough to fill out a form and fill out a survey there, they want something different than what is already there. So speak to that a little bit, and where Mary Miller fits into that. Thoreau Vigneraj, Brandon Scott, other people have been very involved in government in other ways. But then there's just sort of the outside part of this that I think a lot of folks thought there would be other outsiders coming into the circumstance. I think a lot of people are very intimidated by being the next mayor of Baltimore, because Don and I sit around here and talk about just what a heavy job it's going to be.
Well, Reverend Hathaway hit an excellent point, because when asked, 77% of Baltimore voters said they did not trust, they did not have trust nor have confidence in the politicians running the city. 83% are dissatisfied with the quality of public education in Baltimore City. 75% didn't trust current officials to deal with crime. And crime, for 2 out of every 3 voters, was the number one issue. So that all screams to an outsider having an excellent opportunity on June 2nd.
Well, we're going to talk about TJ, and we're going to talk about Sheila. We're going to talk with all of these people. Sheila is the most interesting candidate in all of this, because she's done nothing but run. It feels like she's always running. She has spent time with us, and I was kind of pleasantly surprised by how much she had to say. You know, gift cards aside from years ago, but you can't gift cards aside from years ago, but she has consistently gotten real votes, lots and lots and lots of real votes, and lots of write-in votes. I think she is still the favorite in some quarters. Some thoughts about her candidacy.
Well, I would, if I was a Las Vegas odds maker, I probably would have her as the favorite. I think she's got a floor that below which she will not go. But the flip side of that is she's got a ceiling above which she will not rise, likely. And so is that in this kind of election, in this kind of environment, is that a horrible position to be in? No.
Well, particularly, Patrick, in that I've talked to a number of the campaigns recently, and all of them now, pandemic-related and otherwise, have really ratcheted down, and I don't know if you have a sense of this as well, have ratcheted down what they expect turnout to be. I think when the race began, I think on the Democratic side, they expected perhaps as many as 135 to 140,000 votes to be cast. I've heard estimates recently from some campaigns, but now they've ratcheted down to maybe 70 to 90,000. I mean, that's not many voters in a city the size of Baltimore deciding who the next mayor is going to be.
Well, Don, in 2016, 135,000 people voted in the mayor's race with Pugh and Catherine and Sheila and the cast of others. I thought at the time, 3 months ago, beginning of the year, I thought 150, given the dissatisfaction driving right. this election, I thought 150 was realistic. Now, all bets are off as far as the way the election's being conducted now. I don't have a clue. I wouldn't make a prediction. If it came in a range between 70 and 150, fine. I'm going to accept whatever.
Right.
Now, one thing I saw in the special election that was completed on April 28th, I thought turnout was going to be horrible. The numbers I've seen, it wasn't that bad. It ended up total turnout for a special election can be as low as 15%, which is about, I thought it was going to be there or lower. I've heard it was around 20%.
Yeah, I saw 23 with some votes still to come in. So there's a chance that it might even reach 25. And you're suggesting then, see, my reaction to that, Patrick, is it's a dismal number, but your reaction is, historically, given special elections, that number would actually outperform what's typically an average in a special.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so am I transferring what happened in the 7th automatically to what's going to happen on June 2nd? No.
Right.
It's the best indicator we have at this point to kind of refer to and try to get a sense of you know what the end up with the total vote's going to end up being.
Patrick Gonzalez is here. He is the president at Gonzalez Research. They do polls. We are talking about the Baltimore election. We're going to have all the mayoral candidates on this week, as well as university presidents. Of course, Don Moeller with us, former Baltimore County executive. All of our sponsors from Fadley's and State Fair and Moeller and Gary Realty all pitching in, doing a bunch of Baltimore positive as we really get ready and ramp up for June 2nd. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I also want to give a shout-out to our friends at KO Public Affairs. Help us in a number of ways putting Baltimore positive together. Patrick, have you and I spoke a couple of months ago, and at that time, your polling was indicating, it's sort of what Nestor has alluded to, the sort of thirst for an outsider. So given that information and your instinct at the time and what polling was telling you, I'm guessing that you're not terribly surprised then that Mary Miller has sort of been able to make this move where she now, in some polls, is tied for the lead, and it's really come out of nowhere. Has that surprised you at all?
Well, I mean, she's dumped, what, $2 million?
And, right.
Yeah, so in that sense, no. I think ultimately, though, you know, the most recent poll I saw had her tied with Sheila at 16%.
Right.
At the end of the day, I think that's about it for Mary. I don't see her finishing much higher than 15%. But
now, we'll see. Why do you say that, Patrick?
Because her message really isn't tapping into the frustration that the voters are expressing. I mean, she talks about, you know, I'm going to let the current police commissioner run with his plan. I'm paraphrasing. I don't want to.
I'm with you.
But she's running sort of has a message that it's not kind of tapping in to kind of the sentiment of the voters.
What's the sentiment of the voters? Give me what's going to get someone out. What's that candidate saying that's getting votes in your mind?
Well, somebody that's saying that acknowledges the crime is driving this city into the ground. And I am going to do such and such to solve the problem, and it convinces the voters.
Now, given that scenario, Patrick, and again, we don't have, and I am going to ask you why the effect that the pandemic had on your polling, but given that scenario, that would seem to point towards a Theroux or a TJ who have really wrapped themselves in that crime issue. Am I reading that correctly?
And I think so, although, again, the messages over the last 4 to 6 weeks have either been totally muffled because there's no coverage other than the coronavirus. And so how is the average Baltimore voter kind of taking in and processing, you know, the various candidates, given that sort of barricade up to communication? You know, you can't go door to door as a candidate. You can't have your surrogates going and talking to people. So the only way really to communicate with voters at this point is through television and television ads, and Mary Miller certainly has dominated that.
Well, but what is that worth, though? I mean, Don sees those ads in Catonsville. My mother used to see him in Dundalk, right? Like, it doesn't that doesn't really ring the bell. I mean, the counties don't vote for the city, and that's part of the whole Baltimore positive issue, is that it's my belief and a foundational belief that, hey, for Baltimore to rise up, the people from the counties are going to want to have to come back. The mayor's going to need to be attractive to Catonsville and Hunt Valley and Bel Air as well to, for at some point, bring people back to the harbor that I live at, you know, and for me to sell my condo.
When you say what's it worth, and I will let Patrick weigh in on this, once again, he alluded to it. I mean, people can talk about all the new age methods they want. And Patrick, if I'm wrong about this, please correct me. You can talk about all the new social media and all that stuff you want, but at the end of the day, the effective use of points and buying media time that's appropriately placed on television is still the only way to move the needle. Is that not true?
Yeah, no, fundamentally, I agree with that, Don. And, and Nestor, you hit a point that has been driving has driven me crazy for 35 years. So I hate waste, okay? So I guess I am a good green America. I do. I despise waste more than anything. But sometimes in politics, you have to do things. And what you have to do in this case is buy TV airtime that is going to be seen by a lot of viewers that cannot participate in what you are.
And what good does that do when Sheila wins, or TJ even wins, when they've spent the least amount of money by a pack load, quite frankly, right?
What good does it do, Nestor? It sends the message, if that were to happen, that sometimes money is not the god. Sometimes there are other factors on this.
Well, Warnock spent a fortune a couple of years ago, right? Like, that's why I'm saying, like, buying ads on Channel 45 or Channel 11, it hasn't won an election here since Schaefer, and he didn't have to buy elections. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know at what point that method.
What do you mean, Nestor, when you say it hasn't won an election? Of course it's won an election.
Baltimore City election, I'm talking about. Baltimore City election.
Catherine Pugh spent a lot of money at the end of that. And Patrick, weigh in again. Catherine Pugh spent a lot of money at the end of that election with loans from other folks and last-minute media buys. That most
and still almost lost to Sheila twice, though, right? I mean, who didn't buy ads, right?
Well, again, sometimes you have to talk to a lot of surrounding voters so you can be sure that you're talking to Baltimore City voters. And again, does it hit me perfectly? I used to love cable television because you could go into a county, if you had a countywide race, and hit that county, and you knew you were in the county. Whereas if you went into Baltimore to persuade voters, or you went into BAL or MAR or something to buy some TV time that was much more seen by a much larger audience, but you had a lot of waste. Bottom line, in Patrick's opinion, you've got to spend money on the air still in 2020, to move the needle, as Don talked about, in an election. So, again, if I were advising my candidates running for mayor, I would say you've got to buy Baltimore TV.
I want to talk to you about the aerial surveillance and that as a thought of a crime deterrent. Let's say the blimp goes up in the sky, there's a carjacking, it's my wife, it's your wife, it's Don's wife. 3 days later, they've apprehended the suspect. It was the blimp in the sky. When that starts happening, then that thing's already popular. It's popular with me. I live at the Inner Harbor, and my wife jogs through the Inner Harbor with a mask on at this point. So, I, for me, public safety, 1,000,000% the number one issue for anything that's going to bring on everything else. And we can take squeegee boys in education, and we can talk about economic development, adding COVID, you know, adding tax base, all of these issues. But the crime issue that you pointed out, you didn't even talk about 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6, because for you, it's all about crime. In 16, it was all about crime, and now it's worse. I mean, it was Freddie Gray at that point, right? And Stephanie being shown the gate. At this point, for crime to be the number one issue, and that's what we're talking about, if that's the thing you solve that starts to heal Baltimore, we're going to have half the candidates on this week saying the police are too tough, we don't like the police, the FOP's involved in this. Then you're going to have Mary Miller and others saying, no, we can't fire another police commissioner. And I think Don subscribes to that theory as well, because we've been through too many of them. At some point, you have to let Sonia Sanalesis and you have to let Michael Harrison run what they're running. So there really are mixed messages here about crime and about police, that it is very polarizing, I guess, for voters, because no one's walking the middle of, well, consent decree and we need to be doing the right thing, but we need changes. Yeah, everybody has put their platform down here, and I'm not sure everybody even knows what the platform issues are, or that you learn them in one Mary Miller ad or TJ flying a really cool, and it was a great ad at the end, a drone over the city that showed downtown in the backdrop. I don't know. Does that really win votes? I mean, do these people go to the websites and read stuff?
Well, let me just share with you and Don and your audience a couple things. On a personal level, I don't like electronic surveillance generally. So I'm not sure where I come down. I'm all for electronic drones finding criminals and, being able to pinpoint exactly who did what. I'm not so much for drones pinpointing exactly who was out with whose wife a week ago.
And that's not what it does or is designed to do, by the way.
Oh, no, it's not what it does, but it's what it could do. Okay, now let me get to the other point, and this is what I'm going to share with you guys. It's never been made public, but it is, based on polling that I've done, about 90% of Baltimore voters support stronger laws for those that traffic in guns or misuse guns. About 75% strongly oppose that. I mean, strongly support stiffer penalties for gun laws of that nature. Now, you candidates can go around and they can talk about how the Baltimore Police Department has had abuses over the years, which is totally true. And they can talk about that all they want. But that's not, at this point, on a macro level, what Baltimore voters are thinking or what they want. They want a candidate that will come in, and again, that's what a campaign is for. This is what I believe. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to address the crime issue. And whoever best taps into that will be able to, reap the political benefit of that.
No, these are big issues that voters are going to have to weigh in on. Patrick, before we let you get out of here, one of the things that I think the public sometimes tries to sort out, you were hired earlier this year by Fox 45, by Sinclair, to do polling for their station. Some would suggest that they had a candidate in the race, that Sinclair folks had an affinity for Theroux and his campaign. So the question becomes, when you get hired by a media outlet like that to do a poll, does their preference for a candidate influence your sample or the results of your work?
And I've heard those stories. Let me put it this way, as gently and kindly as that. No client has ever express to me their opinion one way or the other on how I should conduct my poll, and I hope they never do, because I'm going to lose a potential friend right on the spot. So, Fox 45 never told me how to conduct my poll. We had intended to do many more than we did, and I think the coronavirus just threw everything out of whack.
How would you poll right now? I mean, like, what could be a temperature for this? And knowing that in the summer, independent candidates could come along and run against a candidate that only got 35,000 votes a couple of weeks from now, if there's actually less turnout and then more turnout to vote against Trump primarily in the city in November, that November's election is going to be interesting too. But trying to get out and shake hands and kiss babies, that's not what this election's about. And I think none of that was weighed in for anybody back in January as to where the world would stop on March 14th. And all I would see are Mary Miller ads, quite frankly.
Yeah, right. Well, that's not a bad summation of what's kind of happened in the last 2 months. But I think whoever wins the primary in June is going to end up being the mayor. I mean, I think there are going to be a lot of lawsuits probably and stuff. I still have a sense, though, that somebody let me just sum it up this way. I felt 3 months ago, I feel today, that it's probably going to come down to Sheila, TJ, and Brandon. I think Sheila's kind of, she's capped at some point. So I really think if one candidate is likely to kind of catch fire and kind of just take that momentum through for the next month, it's likely going to be TJ or Brandon. And my sense is that at the end of the day, I thought couple months ago, and I still think that. I think T.J. Smith has run the best campaign, certainly with the least money, and I think his message is most consistent with sort of the mood of Baltimore voters, so we'll have to see.
And to me, he would make, Patrick, it's interesting you mentioned that, he actually is, from my perspective, the best answer to Nestor's question, because I think a lot of folks would agree with you. In turn, we've seen TJ out in public. We see the way people have reacted to him. And TJ, with a couple of million dollars, would be in a very different place right now, wouldn't he, if he were all over the airwaves?
If TJ had been on the air like Mary Miller the last month, in my opinion, he'd be 10, 15 points ahead or more.
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The lack of resources really, really, again, comes to play and whether people like it or not, if you're going to be a major player in elected politics, you got to be able to get on the air. Hey, real quick, Patrick, also before we get out of here, a lot of controversy now, particularly as we get into the presidential polling, about these online surveys. Like, what is it, like Survey USA, YouGov?
Right.
Tell us from a pollster perspective why people sort of roll their eyes at those surveys.
Well, I think a lot of those polls, the YouGov poll, the Survey USA, they're all basically online polling. And so, again, you have samples that are probably disqualifying too many people because they're not going to participate in an online poll. And I don't want to get into the minutia of polling. Do people lie? Of course people lie, but fundamentally, if human beings didn't tell the truth, polling would not work, but it's easier to it's harder to lie to someone, Don. As you and I are talking right now, it would be harder for me to lie to you as you have my voice right in your ear right now than it would be if I hang up and you and I start texting back and forth and I say, well, I'm going to slip him a little lie. So, in other words, I still am a firm believer in person-to-person interviewing fundamentally, and the world's going to change. It's going to be different 50 years from now, but still, in the year of our Lord, 2020, Patrick Gonzalez still believes person-to-person interviewing is still the most effective.
This is completely different than anything else where you're trying to find momentum, right, for candidates, and there's no way to show momentum. TJ can't put a room full of people together in South Baltimore. Mary can't convene a group together in East. There's no convening.
Right.
And I think that that makes it even harder to get any temperature. None of us have left the house.
No, I agree. I mean, I would love to do a poll right now because I think – it would still be, I still think I could get a sense, has anybody kind of caught that momentum? And the only sense we have is that recent poll that was released that had Mary Miller and Sheila and who Brandon tied at 16. But the first question is, and I'm not questioning anybody's motives or anything, but who paid for that poll?
Mm-hmm. But that goes back to your point, though, Patrick. That poll was conducted by a very respected firm.
Oh, absolutely.
Hart Gang. I mean, I'm sure you have great respect for those guys. You know, I certainly know them.
By the way, the first thing I said, Patrick, when 45 thing came out with Through, I said, who paid for that poll? That's the first thing I said. So,
Patrick said very clearly that it had no impact on his results.
I'm just saying, it's the first thing everybody says is
I'm asking honestly, because I don't know the answer. Who paid for that poll that had Sheila Miller?
According to the Morning Sun, it was an IE.
I.e., which
independent expenditure group that was put together.
I'm asking.
No, it was an I.E. put together, but I'm assuming Hart Gang. I'm assuming Fred Gang would give me the same answer that you gave me.
Oh, I know. I've gone up against Fred Gang a couple times over the years. Most particularly, I think he was polling for Anthony Brown in 14.
Right.
I was doing the media polling. Fred Yang is good. Peter Hart has been around, unfortunately, as long as I have. Actually, longer. And that shows you how old I am. So.
Well, you did mention, before we let you get out of here, you did mention the gubernatorial race, and you're right, almost everyone else had it wrong. And at the end, you said Larry Hogan was going to win. So your sample was right, and Gonzalez Research got it right. What was it about that again, do you think, Patrick? Was it your sample? Do you think others were oversampling Dems at that time, too?
I don't have. You know, the only polling is other than the candidate polling that you didn't see a whole lot of. The other polling, and I don't want to pick on anybody, was that YouGov, CBS YouGov out of New York, or in the New York Times or something. I mean, they had Anthony up by 13, 15. At the same time, I got the races dead even. So, again, at the time, my assumption was it was a faulty methodology because it was online, and they missed something. And specifically what they missed, I have not a clue. But
right.
Well, I will not miss the envelope when it comes, and I'll get my little I voted sticker, and I guess I won't be doing it across the street in gloves, and I will just mail it in. It's a little anticlimactic when you mail it in, but it still feels a little dramatic when you're filling a little. I mean, I did it for the first time. I think that's where we're going to be going with a lot of this stuff, and I think that will change things too. Patrick, really appreciate you spending some time with us and really taking a deep dive and providing the candor that you're well known for.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, guys.
Yeah, hope we can have you back. Really, really appreciate it. Maybe we'll have you back right before the election. See by that time if we have a clear front runner.
Sounds good.
Patrick, you know, next time there's a poll out, and I say, who did that poll? And Mueller will say, that's Gonzalez. But, I know that guy. So I appreciate you coming on, man.
You take care.
You got it. Patrick Gonzalez, Don Mueller. We are together here doing the Baltimore Positive thing that we've been doing leading up to the election. We're having the mayoral candidates on this week. Lots and lots of university folks, as well as arts and museums, culture, all up at BaltimorePositive.com. Big thanks to our sponsors at Fadley's. Yes, you can ship world-famous Fadley's crab cakes anywhere, a click away. Yes, they're just as delicious when they come. And you'll appreciate them even more during the pandemic and the lockdown here. I'm close enough that I could curbside a little mac and cheese as well. Don't forget our friends at State Fair over in Catonsville. Don Mueller right around the corner from the delicious chicken and waffles and shrimp and grits. I got to get over and get some wings before it's all over with. Burgers as well. And they're also doing, you can pick your protein and your vegetable. And they will ship you a meal you can make at home as well. You can curbside some great takeaway food. Our dear friend Evan, I miss everybody over there. I miss the coffee with the French press. Soon. We'll all get together soon. As well as Mohler and Gary Realty. My dear friend Jeff Mohler was on the program last month talking all sorts of COVID-related things for people buying, selling homes. I see him online, socially distanced, wearing his mask, and selling homes. So find them at Mohler and Gary Realty. On behalf of my dearest partner, former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler, from Catonsville to downtown to you, we are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Keeping calm, staying local, staying Baltimore positive.